It wasn't the point of I didn't want to pay my parking tickets or I'm trying to get over on the city or something like that. It was the point that I had to come to a decision of literally, do I keep this car or do I pay my rent?
That's Laquanda Renault, a Chicago woman who had to file for bankruptcy after being hit with tons of debt from unpaid parking tickets. We speak with her and ProPublica reporter Melissa Sanchez about her new story that illustrates how debt from citations pile up the worst in Chicago's low-income, mostly African-American neighborhoods. Plus, it's Friday. Let's go to the movies. Illinois movies, I should say.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
He's sick.
Thank you, Simone.
We hear about a new list to celebrate Illinois' most popular movies as the state celebrates its 200th anniversary. It's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. We'll get started after the latest news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. No one loves getting a parking or traffic ticket. We've all been there. They're expensive and a hassle. And if you get enough of them, you can lose your license. But a new report from ProPublica Illinois, published in partnership with Mother Jones, reveals how some Chicago residents are not just losing their jobs, they're having to file for bankruptcy because of tickets issued by the city. And there's a pattern to what kind of residents are vulnerable. In fact, according to the story, ticket debt piles up disproportionately in the city's low-income, mostly Black neighborhoods. ProPublica Illinois reporter Melissa Sanchez is here with me now at our Evanston studio at Northwestern University to tell me more about her findings. Melissa, thanks for being here with me.
Thanks for having me.
I'm also joined on the line from New York by Columbia University law professor and economist Edward Morrison. He studied the ties between ticket debt and bankruptcy, specifically in Chicago. Edward, thanks for being with me, too.
Thanks for having me.
And we have one of the people who was featured in Melissa's story, Laquanda Renault, with us as well. Hi, Laquanda. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here, too.
Yes, for sure.
Melissa, there's very few people listening who don't sympathize with the idea of getting a parking or traffic ticket. But I think for a lot of people, it's really hard for them to imagine how that one ticket stuck to your window can lead to bankruptcy. But you wrote, if you are working poor, and particularly for African-Americans in Chicago, a single unpaid parking ticket or a red light traffic camera ticket can quickly spiral out of control and threaten livelihoods. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. I think a lot of people know how expensive tickets can be in Chicago. But one of the tickets that's issued more frequently in these kinds of neighborhoods is a ticket that's tied to finances, and that's having your city sticker. That costs $87 a year to have a sticker, and some people just don't get it for a variety of reasons. Those tickets cost $200. If you don't pay it, it doubles. That's $400. And if you still don't pay it, the city tax on a collection fee when they send it to the debt collectors, that's 22%. So that $200 ticket that you got for not buying an $87 sticker ends up costing you $488. For people who make the minimum wage and are struggling to piece together 40 hours a week, that's a hell of a lot of money. That's the cost of rent. That's the cost of buying your kids' clothes for the year. It's the cost of groceries. And so people don't necessarily pay up that ticket when they get it. And you get a couple of those in a week or in a month, they start racking up. And so the burden hurts poor people more because they're accumulating those extra penalties that middle class Chicagoans don't get because they pay the tickets right away. And so when you accumulate a few of these tickets, then the city can ask the state to suspend your license, your car gets put on the city's boot list, and losing your driving privileges is really difficult, especially if you live in neighborhoods that are far from public transit, if you have to drive, you know, across town to get to work, if you have to take your kids to the school, etc. So because the debt becomes so high and the city's options for paying off that debt are really difficult to even enter. The city will charge you $1,000 to enter a payment plan if your debt is significant. Then bankruptcy becomes your best option. And it's not a very good option, but it's slightly more affordable than getting on a city payment plan.
Laquanda, can you share with us your story? When did you first start accumulating ticket debt?
Yeah, so I got my first car. I was 18, so I had my son. I had him pretty young, out of high school, and so I was always commuting through the bus, but I worked like untraditional work hours, not 9 to 5 or anything, but sometimes late nights, early mornings at coffee shops. And so my first ticket was because of the city sticker with my car, because my neighbor helped me to get a car. Well, he sold me a car because he used to see me like having to take the bus so late with my son. So he said, you shouldn't be out here that late with your kid, right? And so just thinking about the safety of myself and my son, I got a car right away. But with that, I wasn't prepared for the parking tickets or the city stickers. And just from that, it was really challenging because, by me being a young mother and also a single mother, I was starting to experience a lot of challenges between where should I live and, who do I count on to help me with babysitting and different things like that, and trying to figure out those financial things. So
yeah, so parking tickets, it sounds like parking tickets were really not high on the priority list, it sounds like.
Exactly. So it's the last of my worries.
So when you got, did you get them in the mail? Did you know that the tickets were piling up, that it was the cost of them was going up?
I mean, sometimes I did know, but like I said, at the time I was experiencing some housing instability. So sometimes I would get the ticket like on the car, of course, but then when it comes down to the final notice and this notice, I mean, I wasn't getting them, or if I were to get them, like I said, it was like the last of my worries.
And I know this was years ago, but I imagine the tickets sort of ended up haunting you, didn't they? I mean, when we're talking about when you were hearing Melissa talk about it spiraling out of control, would you say that's accurate?
That is so accurate. So that one car that I had when I was 18, and all of those tickets from the not having a city sticker, those doubled, like she said. Once I got my next car, those tickets followed me. And so I tried to get on payment plans. I was on payment plans. But the thing is, I couldn't afford them all the time. I couldn't afford to stay on them at some points because the amount it was to stay on it, sometimes it could be like $200 per month for my situation because I had so many tickets. And not also taking away from how much money I put down to even get started on that payment plan was a lot of money. And so when I were to get on a payment plan, if I were to get defaulted on that payment plan, of course, there's additional fees that stacks up. And so it's really hard to kind of get things down, right? And that's what led me to think about bankruptcy, because I was like, it keeps following me. So how am I able to kind of consolidate this debt where I can finally see myself getting out of it, because that wasn't happening with the payment plan.
So the payment plan required a minimum. I think the payment plan to get on a payment plan with the city is what? It's like a minimum of $1,000, LaQuanda, or 25% of how much you owed, whichever one is less. But how much did you owe? Was it about... How much was what was the big amount? Do you remember?
Yeah. Well, that is actually something new. At the time when I was going through my payment plans and things like that, I was able to get a hardship plan of like 25% or to be 50%. But if you were to default it on your plan, you was not eligible for the hardship plan anymore. So at that time, I didn't have the privilege to choose between $1,000 or the 25%, whichever is less. Sometimes it could have been I had to pay $1,200, $1,500. And also, the moments where I was getting on a payment plan was the moment when my car was booted. So that also put the additional financial barriers on there, because now I'm charging for the boot, for the storage fees, for all of those different things.
And it's all adding up. We're talking to LaQuanda Renault about her experience ending up filing for bankruptcy because of parking tickets issued by the city of Chicago. It's all reporting that was done by ProPublica Illinois' Melissa Sanchez, who's in studio with me. Ed Morrison is also on the line with us from New York, where he teaches at Columbia Law School. And Ed, can I just bring you into this conversation to ask you about Chicago in particular and its relationship to citations? Do you see Chicago as a city being especially aggressive in its ticketing and this debt collection process?
Well, I don't have a good baseline to compare to other cities, but stories are told that tickets are an important source of distress in other cities. But I think what singles Chicago out is the dramatic shift in enforcement policy beginning in mid-2011.
Melissa, can you jump in here? Would you say this is something that part of the Emanuel administration, they said they were going to be very strict about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's not like other mayors haven't gone after outstanding ticket debt as a source of revenue, but Mayor Emanuel has been especially aggressive about it. And one thing that he's done or that's happened under his administration with higher numbers has been license suspensions. That has gone up in the past few years. And that's, like LaQuanda could tell you, a really significant reason why people file for bankruptcy. Bankruptcy gives them a legal relief that allows them to lift suspensions or prevent a suspension from happening.
LaQuanda, I wonder, can you weigh in here? Because did your license eventually get suspended? And then there are more fees for that too, right?
Yes, that's correct. So eventually, like we were talking about how the tickets follow you, this was my second or third car, I believe. My car, I had to choose between should I pay my rent or should I get this car off the boot. So I chose to pay my rent. And from there, I didn't drive because it came to a point where I said I cannot afford the parking tickets. I cannot afford the stickers. I just cannot afford it anymore. And it looked like a waste of money, to be honest. So I have to travel from the south side to the north side because I'm also a student. I always work some type of job, and I had go obligations to my son, so I had to make that choice. And it was hard because it's early mornings, late nights. So I decided after 2 years of taking the train and the bus to get a car again. But in order for me to get a car again, I said, I don't want this debt to follow me. So I went to And my license was suspended, so I didn't want to drive around illegally. And so I went to get the bankruptcy.
Melissa, as LaQuanda's describing all of this, it just seems like you can just sort of see everything kind of mounting on top of each other, like all of these costs. And I wonder in your reporting if you found how much of LaQuanda's story is very typical of a lot of people where you need a car to work. Public transportation is not necessarily, even in a city like Chicago, a lot of people don't realize a lot of the jobs are not where public transportation is, or maybe you don't live near public transportation. So you are in hours long commutes in the way LaQuanda is describing. How typical is her story in the reporting that you did for people who are filing for bankruptcy?
It's pretty typical. I've spoken to a couple dozen people, and all of them said that the reason they filed for bankruptcy was because they needed to drive. Either they needed a car to drive or they needed a license in order to work. Sometimes you don't need a license to drive physically. You can drive illegally, like LaQuanda said, and like a lot of people do anyway. But there's some jobs that require a license, like even to get apprenticeships at certain nonprofits. I know there's valet drivers, the valet parkers who park your car. You need a license to do that. You need a license for all sorts of jobs. And so all of these things are leading people to file.
And then there are other things, Melissa, also that can happen if people don't pay their tickets as well. What else can happen?
So apart from losing your license or your car, the city can ask the state to garnish your wages. There's some like debt collection lawsuits that the agencies that the city hires will file against folks.
Right. LaQuanda, that happened to you, right? The city, did you actually have a tax refund garnished because of how much you owed?
Right. Yeah. So I for the time that I was on the suspension and, I didn't get back on that payment plan. I wasn't active on that. From then on, I never received my state taxes. And so when I actually, with working with Melissa, I wanted to find out, although I used to get these notifications, hey, you're not going to get your state refund, I never used to see where was that money going, or like how many the amount of tickets that it went towards. So I reached out to the city to try to figure that out more in depth, but it was a really hard process to kind of try to figure out where was the exact money and my state refund, where was it going. But for the longest I didn't receive it, at least for the 3 years.
So refunds being garnished, licenses being suspended. So Melissa, this goes beyond just cars. Can you explain what anti-scoff law laws are?
To work in the city, you can't have any debt. So if you want to be a teacher, if you want to be a bus driver, if you want to be a school recess monitor, you can't have any tickets. So there's some jobs that are just off limits. I met a woman in bankruptcy court who was wearing a lanyard around her neck for Harris & Harris, one of the city's two debt collection firms. And I thought she was there in bankruptcy court as a debt collector, but it turned out she was there because she had $10,000 in unpaid tickets, and you can't get a job for the debt collection firm if you have tickets. So there's like just all these categories of programs, jobs, funds that you can't tap into if you are too poor to pay off tickets.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation talking about tickets and the spiral towards bankruptcy in the city of Chicago. Reporting from ProPublica, Illinois, we'll tweet out Melissa Sanchez's story so you can see it if you follow 21ST Show. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Voodoo. We're talking about parking tickets, and it seems like it wouldn't be a big problem, but how much this has led to bankruptcy filings in the city of Chicago. This is where conversation is based on reporting that was done by ProPublica and Mother Jones. ProPublica, Illinois reporter Melissa Sanchez is in studio with me here. I'm also speaking with Laquanda Renault. She's a Chicago resident who had to file for bankruptcy because of her parking ticket debt. Ed Morrison is on the line with us from New York. He teaches law at Columbia Law School and studies this issue. Ed, can I ask you what led you to studying this issue, particularly in Chicago?
Well, there's an unusual pattern in bankruptcy filings across the country, which is the large representation of African Americans in a style of bankruptcy called Chapter 13. And it's been noted that this overrepresentation of African Americans is particularly prevalent in several cities, including Chicago. So I felt interested in trying to understand what is driving the prevalence of African-Americans in Chapter 13, and in the process of trying to figure that out, I stumbled across what seemed to be a dramatic shift in filings by African-Americans beginning in 2011, and drilled down into that and discovered that that coincided with a dramatic change in enforcement by the Emanuel administration.
Melissa, can you explain why Chapter 13? Because I think people hear about people filing for bankruptcy, and there are a couple different ways you can do that. Can you explain a little bit more about the Chapter 13 filings?
The basic reason for the purposes of what we're talking about now is that under Chapter 13, tickets are dischargeable, which means that you can wipe out that kind of debt. And the other kind of bankruptcy is Chapter 7, and you cannot get rid of ticket debt with that. And then more broadly, Chapter 13 is cheaper to start. There's often no money down type bankruptcies, whereas with Chapter 7, lawyers often charge a $1,000 legal fee up front.
And Melissa, what kind of tickets were the most common when it comes to those leading to bankruptcy?
The most common tickets that are issued in Chicago that are the most common that people pay, that don't pay, go into bankruptcy are red light camera tickets. And the red light camera program is expanded, just like the speed camera program under the Emanuel administration.
The red light camera program has also been controversial, and there have been lawsuits around that. How has that factored into all of this?
That's a really great question, and that's among the many issues that we're drilling down into in the next couple of months. But I think we're going to have a story that looks at just that issue, what's happened with the camera program and who's getting those tickets.
So there could be a possibility of people who got red light camera tickets improperly who maybe now...
For sure.
You think absolutely there are people who improperly were issued red light camera tickets, but that led to further debt. And even possibly bankruptcy?
Yeah, I mean, it's among the reasons that they filed for bankruptcy. But there's people with tickets that they did not get the proper notice about afterward. That's part of this big lawsuit now. And those people may have gotten that ticket and a number of other tickets as part of a bankruptcy case.
And there was also the timing of the cameras themselves and the lights in terms of that's another lawsuit.
There's a lot of issues to look into with the camera. So, but even beyond that, one of the things that we're really looking into is just like who got tickets, period, like whether they were issued correctly or not.
That's Melissa Sanchez from ProPublica, Illinois. Melissa's done lots of reporting on this. We'll tweet that out if you follow. Our handle is 21STShow. Ed, can I ask you, as Melissa's talking about people filing for Chapter 13 bankruptcy, is that an effective, you mentioned you noticed and there's a flood of people filing, you're noticing this in Chicago. Is this a successful tactic? Does this help people who are low income? And what are the consequences of filing for bankruptcy as well?
It's an unusual story. For years, Chapter 13 was thought to be a really unsuccessful kind of bankruptcy because it takes 3 to 5 years to complete it. During that time, the person in bankruptcy is effectively put on a repayment plan, and it's, as we know, it's very difficult to complete these repayment plans, and roughly 2/3 of people are unable to complete the plan and don't get their debts discharged. But what's really, I think,
and then what happens?
Well, then they leave bankruptcy without their debts discharged, and creditors can come back and seek to get the repayment. And, you know, if your car is subject to seizure, it can be seized again. But I think what's important to keep in mind in the Chicago experience is that Chapter 13 is a sort of a release valve. It's releasing a lot of pressure on poor South Side and West Side communities that are facing this really aggressive increase in enforcement. I mean, you can just keep the statistics in mind that there was, like, I think, a roughly 175% increase in license suspensions since 2011. So it's the biggest increases have occurred on the South and West Sides. And so what the Chapter 13 filing does is that it offers two benefits. If you can complete it, yeah, it'll wipe out your debts. But you don't have to complete the plan to get the benefits. As soon as you file, you can get your license back. As soon as you file, until recently, you could get your car back. And now there's a shift in Chicago policy about whether you can get your car back if it's been seized. But that's currently a source of controversy in the courts. But the immediate relief is that to the extent you needed your license to get to work and potentially your car too, filing for Chapter 13 bankruptcy offers that release, that sort of a release of pressure. And that in and of itself is an important benefit of the Chapter 13 process.
LaQuanda, was that the case for you when you filed for Chapter 13?
Well, yeah. As I explained it, it's a Band-Aid to a problem, right? It doesn't relieve you completely of the debt. For me, what I found out is that it really, although it consolidates the debt as far as the parking tickets, a lot of that money is not going directly to the parking tickets at that moment. And so that's why a lot of people are stuck with that debt at the end. So a lot of the money is going towards the lawyer fees, the judge, the court fees, the things like that. So it puts a band-aid to the problem, like I said, where you're able and as Ed was explaining, you're able to get those licenses back right away. But at the end, you're still stuck with a lot of debt, and it sometimes doesn't even go towards that debt towards the end. And then another challenge that I've been experiencing is the point of, you know, the garnishment from my check. It's like I said, the money is not going directly towards my parking ticket, so I didn't really see what was the strength of this bankruptcy, because I'm going to be tied to it, or I should be tied to it, for at least 3 to 5 years. And if this money is not going towards my debt and it's really going towards court fees and my lawyer fees, how helpful is it, is the question I have to start asking myself.
LaQuanda, how many years into this are you now? What, from when you had the original ticket to when you filed for Chapter 13?
How many years? Probably since 2000, I want to say 2012.
So six years you've been dealing with this. And where are you at now in terms of how much you're paying it off, or how much you have left to pay
off? I've found out I still have $6,700 worth of debt of parking tickets, but also I have a bankruptcy. So,
wow.
Yeah, like LaQuanda filed for bankruptcy last summer. So most of her debt is that $6,700 in tickets. And, right, you only have a couple hundred dollars in credit cards. There's no other debt that the bankruptcy is helping.
Right.
And so she's about to see her case get dismissed. She's kind of given up on it because she doesn't want to turn over her tax refund. And so when that case gets dismissed, most of that ticket debt will still be there, because most of the money that she's paid so far in her payment plan has been, as you were saying, to attorney fees. So once the case is dismissed, then that debt's still there, and then her car and her license are at risk again.
And you, in the meantime, you're out more money, LaQuanda, because you've been paying for all of the attorney fees for the bankruptcy filing. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, that is correct.
Melissa, what does the city say about all of this? What does the city make about of all these bankruptcies? We've talked about, and Ed Morton has pointed out, the just shift in aggressive enforcement of this. What is their response now when they're looking, when confronted with data that you've presented of how many people have filed for bankruptcy because of this?
They don't really say a whole lot. I mean, their response is that, yes, this is happening, but we do a lot to make our plans accessible to people. We give people a lot of notices about tickets before the debt accumulates. But they don't really say a lot about what's happening in bankruptcy court, except to acknowledge that it's happening. There's sort of this idea that folks in the city have, that people have been abusing of the bankruptcy system in order to avoid dealing with their debt, that they file for bankruptcy. They used to be able to get their cars out of the impound lot through bankruptcy. They can't quite do that anymore. But the people will file for bankruptcy just to serve this immediate need, allow the bankruptcy case to get dismissed, and then kind of recycle, do it over and over again. So there's that kind of feeling. And so the city has been really aggressive in its strategies to try to circumvent or, stop people from filing for bankruptcy, but they don't really have a whole lot to say about it.
Ed Morrison, I wonder what you might say to listeners who might be thinking about this, thinking, why don't people just pay their ticket the first or the second or third time before it goes into this spiral? What would be your response to that, Ed?
Well, maybe one way to think about it is to think about who is filing for bankruptcy. The typical person filing for bankruptcy across the country is someone who has fairly meager income. And when you have a family or an individual with very low income facing tickets, it can be very difficult to find the money to pay those tickets, in addition to food for children, for transportation. I think that it's just too easy to take for granted that you could pay tickets. I think, keep in mind, as was said earlier in the program, that some of these tickets can be hundreds of dollars, and before you know it, fees have been added on, and so it's several more hundreds of dollars. And for people, for families who don't have much in the way of discretionary income, it can be almost impossible to pay those tickets. I want to add that I think that, as Ms. Renaud stated earlier, that one of the biggest downsides of Chapter 13 are the lawyer fees, and they typically get paid first. And it's one of the sort of the troubling imbalances in our Chapter 13 bankruptcy process, is that the Chapter 13 process is expensive. The legal fees can be 3 or 4 times as large as they are in any other kind of bankruptcy. And on the other hand, for many families, there's no choice because Chapter 13 is the only style of bankruptcy that allows you to get back your license, to get back your car, and to eliminate your ticket debt. And so I think, in a weird way, federal law offers, a release valve for families in stress, but at a very high price, because federal law says that if you want to get this relief, you have to do it through one particular channel, and that's called Chapter 13, where the lawyer's fees are thousands of dollars, and it takes 3 to 5 years to complete the plan and get relief, and two-thirds of people are unable to complete their plans. And so I think that's, in some sense, there's sort of a happy and a sad story here. The happy story is that Chapter 13 does offer relief for families, crushed by ticket debt. But the sad story is that it's at a very high price.
Laquanda, what do you want people who are listening to know about this story as they think about hearing about parking tickets and bankruptcy and all of this?
Yeah, as I was saying before, to my references, it's a Band-Aid to a problem, because, like I said, it wasn't the point of I didn't want to pay my parking tickets, or I'm trying to get over on the city or something like that. It was the point that I had to come to a decision of, literally, do I keep this car or do I pay my rent, right? And does me not keeping this car, what would that mean? That would mean me having to take the train late nights and ride and think about safety for me and my son. That would be me having to make a lot of different decisions that is hard to make, you know, having to make a decision between food and paying a parking ticket, or two things that are very important. Like, those are not decisions that most people want to make, right? People want to be able to pay off their debt. People want to be able to provide for their families. And so the city is really putting people into this stage where they have to ask themselves these really critical questions, right? And sometimes the best thing that you could do is put a Band-Aid onto this big problem, right? And for my case, I had to, you know, snatch this Band-Aid off, and still it's a scab there, right? Because I still stuck with the debt, you know? I wasn't able to dissolve or get over, or I can't run away from it. It's still there. So that's why it's very important that we understand, like, what are we doing to address the needs of the working poor? What are we doing to address these conversations that mothers like me and other people that's living on the West and South Side have to ask themselves when it comes down to critical things, when it comes down to buying food or putting gas in a car, like, or paying your light bill, paying your rent? Those are necessities that we all need. So I just really wanted to, the reason why I really did this story is because I just really want to highlight the importance of what is the city going to do about this, you know, especially if it's a problem that's affecting mostly people on the South and West sides. What is the city going to do about this? Those are hard questions to have to answer.
Laquanda, thanks for sharing your story with us. That's Laquanda Renault. She's featured in Melissa Sanchez's reporting. ProPublica's Melissa Sanchez has been here. Melissa, thanks for being with me as well.
Thanks for having me.
She reported this story along with Sadia Kampapati. And I want to thank Ed Morrison as well from Columbia Law School in New York. All of you, thank you so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. We're so glad to see so many of you lovely people here tonight. We would especially like to welcome all the representatives of Illinois' law enforcement community who have chosen to join us here in the Palace Hotel Ballroom at this time. We certainly hope you all enjoy the show. And remember, people, that no matter who you are and what you do to live, thrive, and survive, there are still some things that make us all the same. You, me, them, everybody.
Recognize that? That's from the 1980 film The Blues Brothers. It's an iconic Illinois film. It's also the winner of an online poll put out by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. They put out a project called Top 200 to celebrate Illinois' 200th birthday, and they've created 20 top 10 lists for residents to vote on. In this movie contest, Blues Brothers came out on top. We're getting into this project and some other Illinois favorites with two of our friends from the Lincoln Library and Museum. Chris Wills is their communications director. Christian McWhorter is a research historian. Hey, guys, welcome back to the 21st.
Hi.
Hey, happy to be here.
Chris, before we get into these movies, maybe you can explain the bigger project that the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum is doing to celebrate our state's bicentennial. We talked about this in person last month. When we did our 21st from the Lincoln Museum, but this list of movies is part of something you're calling Top 200. What's the thinking behind that?
Well, the state is celebrating its 200th birthday, obviously, so we thought it would be great to give the public a chance to speak out on what they consider the 200 top things and people and places and events in history. So we created a website, IllinoisTop200.com, and every 2 weeks, people can vote on what they consider to be the top movies in Illinois history, or the most important influential businesses, or the top books and scholars, inventors, politicians. And at the end of the year, they'll have selected 200 people, places, and things that they think are the best in state history.
Right. So non and then historic sites, actors, writers, lots of things to celebrate Illinois and our state. So, Christian, let's get into the movies that were part of the poll. Any surprise that the Blues Brothers came out on top?
Probably not. I mean, I'm not from here. I grew up in Canada, and the Blues Brothers was probably the first time I ever saw Chicago or Illinois was watching that movie as a kid.
You know what? I think I was probably the same for me.
Yeah,
I think it was the same thing for me, too, because I didn't grow up in Illinois. I grew up in Miami, and I think I thought Dan Aykroyd was probably Chicago and Illinois when I was a kid.
Right, and he's from Canada, too, right? So there you go.
Oh, no. All right. Well, Christian, we already know this movie was set in Chicago. I wonder if you, and Chris, you can hop in after this, but what do you think this impact of the film was when it came out in 1980 and then after that?
Well, I can tell you one of the things was it really exposed a lot of people to the music the Blues Brothers were covering. A lot of those songs had gone out of print, and it kind of created this impression of Chicago as a place where the blues kind of thrived and got introduced to the world, which is really true and is something Illinois and Chicago should really be proud of.
Chris, do you remember the first time you saw the Blues Brothers?
Yeah, I do. And I remember at the time thinking it was really dumb. All these car crashes and driving through a mall and these guys kind of, if not ripping off, at least sort of capitalizing on classic music. But as time has gone on, I've really grown to appreciate its charms. Yes, it's silly and cartoonish in a way, but it really has a heart. You know, it's about these two guys who are pretty shady, but they're trying to do the right thing. And that's kind of Illinois' image in the world, so it seems very fitting.
Kind of shady, but has a heart.
Trying to do the right thing, you know?
Well, number three on this list is A League of Their Own. And a reminder for everyone, this came out in 1992. At the time, the very A-list stars of Gina Davis, Madonna, and of course, Tom Hanks. Let's take a listen to A League of Their Own.
Say, Evelyn, can I ask you a question? You got a moment?
Mm-hmm. Which team do you play for?
Well, I'm a Peach.
Well, I was just wondering,
because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we've got a two-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass. Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
That's A League of Their Own. That was, of course, Tom Hanks playing a baseball team manager yelling at Biddy Schramm. The movie's actually about the real-life All-American Girls Pro Baseball League. Christian, what do you think the significance of A League of Their Own is? Because at the time, it was really, I think, groundbreaking, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely, in that not only did it highlight something that was, like, specifically, women's history, but I think the women's league in the 1940s had, like, been all but forgotten. And so it just led to this huge revival of interest in this, I mean, really cool women's sports story. And, I mean, there's just not that many movies about women in sports out there, right, still.
Yeah, there still aren't. That's a good point. And Chris, I think there's no crying in baseball. It's kind of one of those pop culture lines that's just stuck around, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's on one of those lists that they do every so often of the top this or that in movies. It's considered one of the top 100 quotes in movie history. So it's really stuck around.
And in that clip, Biddy Schramm's wearing a team jersey with a badge that says Rockford. Christian, can you remind us of the movie in terms of Illinois, where that's set?
Yeah, they're the Rockford Peaches in Rockford, Illinois, just, west of Chicago. So a true Illinois story.
Okay. Now let's move on to a certain Illinois movie that I'm going to guess is the most well-known in this illustrious list. It came in second after this online poll. Let's just go ahead and hear it.
Adamson.
Here.
Adler.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Bueller.
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
Thank you, Simone.
That, of course, is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, starring Matthew Broderick. If for some reason you've never heard of this, it's about a kid who pretends to be sick so he can skip school and have a dream day with his friends in downtown Chicago. I'm talking to Chris Wills and Christian McWhorter from the Lincoln Museum and Library. Chris, what are your memories of this, of Ferris Bueller?
Just the ingenuity and daring of Bueller in his escapades, trying to figure out how to fake a day off, how to get away from school. So it just it really symbolized somebody who was smart and daring enough to do what they wanted to do. And then, of course, it showed off Chicago. It made it seem like such a great wonderland to wander around in and see all these different sights and take part in all these different activities.
And I remember a couple of years ago, there was a really great Twitter account that was pretending to be Ferris and was recreating his whole day and taking pictures of the whole day. And I think it kind of brought back for everybody how much they love about this film. So, Christian, I'm going to need you to defend the honor of this movie here, because part of the reason this came in second place in your poll is because Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune did some of his own online lobbying to make sure it didn't win. It is all in good fun. He is not a fan of this movie. He wasn't able to make it today to come on the 21st, but he did leave us his voicemail explaining his thoughts about Ferris Bueller.
Hey, guys. Michael Phillips here at the Chicago Tribune. My hometown is Kenosha, Wisconsin, but, you know, what can I do about that? I'm calling about the whole debate about what is really Illinois' top movie. And, you know, the fact that Blues Brothers beat out Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I guess that's a good thing. I do prefer that movie. But it's got to be something like either Call Northside 777 with James Stewart, or Haskell Wexler's Medium Cool, or really my favorite of the ones that were nominated, His Girl Friday, which was filmed in, of course, Burbank, California, not anywhere near Chicago. But it is the greatest of the adaptations of The Front Page, which is the quintessential Chicago play, and that was the best film version of it. So I would vote His Girl Friday, but, you know, I can live with the Blues Brothers. I would not have been able to live with Ferris Bueller had that won. I would have had to move back to Kenosha.
All right, that's Michael Phillips, the Chicago Tribune's film critic, giving us his list of Illinois movies. Christian, why is Michael wrong about Ferris Bueller?
Well, I love Michael Phillips. I really do. It's an honor to be even virtually on a show with him.
It's okay. I'm trying to start a fight between you two, as you can see.
He's absolutely right that Ferris Bueller is a movie about, like, kind of an adolescent jerk being an adolescent jerk. And my defense of it is it was at precisely, like, when it came out, I was at the right age to be, you know, an adolescent jerk. And so it was like a perfect movie for, like, someone of that age to, like, see. And just, it's a power fantasy for, like, a high school kid, right? And it really plays well that way. I think it has more heart than he gives it credit for. But yeah, I've got a real soft spot for it. I loved that movie, girl. I loved all John Hughes movies. But, yeah, Ferris Bueller is kind of a cut above. So that's the best I can do to try to defend it. And it makes Chicago look awesome, right? I told you, I didn't live here at the time, and that movie made me want to go to Chicago and see it. It looks like a great place.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with you on that. Chris, one of the movies Michael Phillips mentioned is called His Girl Friday. This came out in 1940. I know you were talking to our producers earlier with your personal favorites. You had His Girl Friday on your list. What do you like about that?
Well, I'm a former reporter, so this is a movie about reporters chasing a story, doing anything for the headlines, and in the process trying to keep a poor guy from being executed for a crime. So it's fun. The comedy is great. It's the fastest paced movie ever because the dialogue is so fast, and it just captures such a wonderful Chicago flavor. So it's just always been a favorite of mine. It's really worth seeing. And, you know, I would like to respond to one thing that Michael Phillips said. Is Blues Brothers the best movie about Illinois? Is Ferris Bueller's Day Off the second best? No. But we're asking people what the top movies are, and we're letting them define that however they want. Maybe it's the one that seems most quintessentially Illinois to them. Maybe it's the one that means the most to them on a personal level. So I don't think we have to think of it as best. We can just think of it as the tops, the one that the people of Illinois like the most.
Or we could think of it as popular versus what a film critic would
pick.
Too.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. So before we end, we're almost out of time, but we have, Christian, your personal favorite that you sent us, 16 Candles by John Hughes.
It's a brand new year. I'm 16. Everything should be platinum. I should be happy, right? Right?
Yeah.
Well, I can't get happy. It is physically impossible for me to get happy.
Christian, you mentioned John Hughes earlier. Why do you think that John Hughes for you represents sort of a lot of this iconic popular Illinois?
It's funny, you know, his movies, they're all set in Chicago, although Chris, I think, pointed out earlier that there's a lot of them could be set anywhere, but the fact that they are all in Chicago, I mean, there is a kind of, you know, I don't know, they kind of touch on a kind of universal experience of what it was to be a teenager or, you know, growing up in the 80s. And there's a lot about 16 Candles that is not defensible at this point. But,
right, yeah, especially at this point, yeah.
It hits, yeah, Long Duck Dawn especially, yes, it's not defensible at all. But and The Breakfast Club is surely a better movie. But again, I'm just, you know, as like Chris said, we're talking about favorites here, movies that had an emotional, you know, resonance for you. And I was at just that right age for, like, John Hughes movies to really hit me in the sweet spot. And they really, you know, reflect what it was like to be a white, you know, middle-class person growing up in the 80s. And they'll always have a little special place in my heart.
Well, we've got the whole list. We'll tweet out that whole list for everybody. If you're looking for something to watch this weekend, I want to thank Chris Wills. He's the communications director at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. Christian McWhorter, research historian. Guys, thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
I'm Nyla Boodoo. That's all the time we have for today. Have a great weekend. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's a fun song for you to start your weekend with.
Thank you.